I don't need the slides. Okay, that's good.
Yeah, that's okay.
Sorry, I just let me...
You can do your own intro if you want.
No, I don't know what my intro is.
No, okay.
Is that it's not very light, is it? Is that me or is it?
I think it might be picking up. Is it on?
No, the light's quite light. It's quite dark.
Yeah. It could be just you. All right, well, I'll
just give me a sec.
It is. I'm sorry to make a clamber around the stage.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back for our next session, session 11, which we're very grateful to have Anthony Marvello with us this afternoon. Anthony's an assistant commissioner.
I believe so. Yeah.
Assistant commissioner with the Australian Tax Office. Although he's based in Sydney, he's here in Brisbane at the moment. We're very appreciative of his time to speak to us about... Australian Tax Office issues guidance to tax professionals providing services to advisors that advise primary producers. I paraphrased the session title because I didn't like the alliteration. So without further ado, I'll hand over to Anthony. Anthony will take questions at the end if you could leave them or submit them through the app and they'll come to me online. I'll moderate out the abusive ones relay them to Anthony. Over to you.
G'day, okay, we've already got a clock counting down. Okay, just give me a tick. Last time I did a random ask questions throughout the course, it turned to a train wreck, and I had to stop a former boss asking me questions that he didn't like the answers to. And as a consequence, the evaluation was rubbish. So hopefully we won't replicate that. Certainly happy to take questions as we go through, and hopefully you'll find this interesting. I too would like to acknowledge the Turrbal and the Yugara people who are the traditional custodians of the Meanjin lands that we meet on today. I pay my respects to their elders, past, present and emerging leaders, and recognise their culture, history and deep connection to this land. So thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here. The topic and the impact and the vast majority of these businesses are small businesses. Some of them grow into being large businesses, but most of them start as small businesses. The ATO considers a small business to be any business, buyer or sole trader, company, partnership or trust, be something with an annual turnover of less than $10 million. But naturally, like I said, a lot of these issues I'll talk about also apply to people who have more than $10 million. I won't cover or seek to cover what's been covered in the past. I know there's been lots of good sessions, so I don't think there's much point in going over old ground. But I do want to thank the Tax Institute, each of you, and the wider tax profession in your role as stewards of the tax and super system. In particular, I want to recognise the hugely important first line of advice or defence you play to ensure the ongoing integrity, confidence and sustainability of the tax and super system. To be quite frank, you guys sort of deal with the knuckle, you know, get rid of the knucklehead stuff so that we don't have to deal with the knucklehead stuff. And we really, really appreciate the role that you play in that first line. And I know each and every one of you go a long way to ensure your clients get things right and do the right things. Further, I understand and acknowledge that some, if not most of you, can't always charge or collect on the services, guidance and counsel you provide your clients, some of which you've helped for generations and whom you've built close personal relationships. And while I acknowledge we don't always agree on the application of the law, the vast majority of us agree as to the importance of the tax and super systems to support the overall prosperity of all Australians. Now, after that brief but very important message, let me return to the matter at hand, and I need to get the thing. Okay, there's some stats there for you. I don't intend to go through them, but I just want to give you a sense of the market, particularly the important fact, which may not be on the slide deck, but most small businesses, or 80% of all small businesses, use some sort of advisor in some shape or form. So you guys are fundamental to that. And we certainly know that small businesses are more sensitive to economic shocks caused by such events as pandemics and inflation. We certainly know agricultural small businesses are particularly vulnerable to natural disasters such as flood, bushfires and drought, let alone international impacts on demand and supply. We in the tax office, like yourselves, want to help small business get their tax, super and registry obligations right, get them right the first time, and certainly stay on track. Moving on. Okay, moving back. Okay. So I just want to touch on something that which may not be familiar to some of you, but is fundamental to about how we approach work across the ATO, but particularly how we approach the work in the small business market. And we call that small business tax gap. So we know that most Australians running small businesses are meeting their obligations and paying about the right amount of tax, or they are trying to do the right thing. And unfortunately, and we recognise this, and this flows through all that we do, we certainly know that small businesses, unlike big business, doesn't have the capabilities and resources. So we acknowledge that mistakes can happen. So one way we're able to identify ongoing issues in the small business community is by looking at the small business tax gap. So the data collected from our tax gap program tells us the biggest tax gap in Australia is the small business tax gap. And that gap is approximately $12 billion. Now, to help calculate the small business tax gap and identify common issues and behaviours contributing to the gap, the ATO conducts and reviews audits on randomly selected taxpayers, and this program has highlighted that the biggest contributor to the tax gap is the shadow economy. And also it's fairly clear that the shadow economy doesn't stop at private wealth, or as we call private and wealthy groups, that is groups over 10 million, but certainly prevails at the individual and the small business level. And that size of that shadow economy small business gap is about $8 billion. And about 5.7 of that is with deliberate underreporting of income and overclaiming of deductions, with the remainder made up of hidden wages and people operating outside the system. That said, most people reviewed in our Tax Gap Random Inquiry program, in that sample, in the main, get things right. There are some genuine mistakes, and often those mistakes are around record keeping or poor record keeping, misunderstanding or misapplying the tax law, and unfortunately, opportunistic behaviour. Like I said, we see you guys as being fundamental to that, and without telling you guys how to suck eggs, we certainly continue to encourage all tax professionals to engage with their clients ensure that they understand their business and you understand their business and have all the information required to help the client report accurately, as well as encourage good record-keeping practices and the appropriate use of digital solutions such as accounting and point-of-sale software. So, if anybody's looking for a list of things that we're interested in, this is the start of the list. Some of these things I will just briefly touch on, depending how we go. I do want to leave some time for questions, including the abusive ones. So we'll just kick into these. As I said, I'll skip over some of them, but we'll see how we go. So like I said, just referring now to record keeping. Most small businesses are doing the right thing, but one of the key things to that is having appropriate governance and good record keeping. So specifically, this means encouraging small business to go digital, lodge their returns in a timely way, act on problems as soon as they arise, that is, contact us as soon as possible, and get good professional advice. And that's where you guys are fundamental. We have coaching kits to assist advisors help their businesses or help their clients. And we also provide a hell of a lot of training directly to small businesses to help them help themselves. We've put a lot, and we continue to put a lot of content onto ato.gov. We're also trying to speak directly to businesses so that we can sort of make some key messages. And obviously that one of those key messages is, if you need help, talk to your advisor or talk to us. And we're certainly trying to hone that language from, dare I say, technical language that you might see in a formal public ruling, but more language that people actually understand. One thing which I'll touch on the tick, we all know that old Are You In Business TR, tax ruling, 99/something or other. And rather than updating that in a formal sense, we decided to, it would be better and more direct to talk to businesses and talk to advisors and the community about what sort of activities do constitute a business in plain language, while using that TR as the fortress or the buttress to make those statements on. That's worked better than spending 2 or 3 years trying to write a new tax ruling about what is really a business, because that tax ruling still does the job. Next one is, The next one is in relation to small business. I failed on this one. Unfortunately, with the impact of COVID and other impacts, small business does have a large debt, which is owed to the Commissioner. Most of that debt is uncontested or self-reported, so it's not, as some media pundits may suggest, as a result of audits. Quite frankly, in the scale of things, we do relatively few audits compared to all the other activities we do. But small business debt is a problem, and is a problem that we're seeking to manage. One of the other key things about small business debt is that a lot of that relates to GST, employee tax withholdings not being returned, and other liabilities reported on activity statements. This is particularly significant as withholdings can be an indicator that employee superannuations may be at risk, because a small business who hasn't paid their employee superannuation often shows as an earlier pattern of falling behind on paying their employees withholding. And currently, small businesses owe $1.7 billion in unpaid superannuation. So our message is clear and consistent. We want to work with small business and yourselves so that we can deal with the problem and get people on track, and certainly work with people as closely as possible with empathy to manage those expectations, because they do weigh down on people. And you know, and half the trick is, you know, dealing with it and putting your hand up and trying to move through. You would have noticed in the federal budget that there is an amnesty for getting things back on track, and that'll be open for small business. It applies for 6 months, just over 6 months, and it applies from years from 1 December 2019 to 28. 28 February 22. So we'll just slightly pivot now to slightly more technical issues. So back a couple of years ago, we decided, because I'm responsible for all the rulings that come into the small business area, we wanted to make it easier on for certain things to be done quicker, or even have advisors not come to us. And one of those things was in relation to the commissioner's discretion for around non-commercial losses where there'd been a material event. So we issued PCG 2022/1, which basically exercises the commissioner's discretion where you fall within certain parameters. That, from what we can tell and what we see and what we hear, is that that's gone down quite well. We will expand the timeframe for that. We are thinking about how we may adjust that. We're also looking at other instances where the commissioner's discretion is readily applied, and other low-risk scenarios to help clients, help you just get on with it, rather than coming to us and asking us to exercise the discretion, which we invariably do. So that's something which we're moving on, and that'll not only apply to non-commercial losses, but it'll also apply to other things, particularly around some CGT concessions. Another important aspect, certainly for agricultural industries, is around lead times, and that's a discretion that we're continually working with clients and advisors on. And certainly, that's one of the key things. One of the key things we do focus on, and we did a pilot of some reviews in the non-commercial loss sector earlier in the year, and we found that most taxpayers weren't actually operating a business. So that takes you out of the provision straight away. So that's a common issue. We see that being a business is one of the fundamental questions that we get, and how that been, because obviously if you're a business, you get certain things, you get better deductions, you get access to better concessions, life's better being a business. That's half a joke. But a lot of clients are not businesses, if at best. The other thing we see in non-commercial losses, and this prevails across the board, is inappropriate use of business and personal expenses. Way too many personal expenses get muddied up into a business tax return. But we pay quite a close eye to that. A lot of that goes to governance and record keeping, but certainly we need everyone's vigilance in that. And obviously, we all know it brings about some nasty surprises if somebody has a second look. The other thing we see in the agricultural industry is some manipulating of trading stock values to pass the assessable income test. Now, we know that people want to do the right thing, but we're just flagging that as a concern. I'll now move on to temporary full expensing, or deductions generally. So you all know that temporary full expensing was introduced as part of the pandemic. It's coming to an end. I know there's concern that some people wanted that increased, but obviously a decision by government not to go down that line. So people need to be mindful that the requirements need to be satisfied. In a nutshell, it needs to be ready to go or installed, ready for use. So that's fairly fundamental. The other fundamental thing that we see is people selling assets or getting trade-ins and not realising there's some sort of balancing adjustment. I know there's lots of, and we've got another instant asset write-off introduced in the budget, but I know that, and I wouldn't mind others' opinions on whether our depreciation rules in general need a bit of a freshening up or a bit of a sort of a streamlining, because frankly, I find them a bit confusing. I don't know about you guys, but so maybe, if I've got nothing to do one long weekend, I might come up with a good idea, but I'm always happy for other ideas. As I mentioned, there was that budget announcement, and that'll be fairly restricted because it's basically applying only to assets less than 20 grand and basically largely back into that small business basis. Now, don't throw any tomatoes, please. Actually, the ripe ones are worse. The non-ripe ones are worse because they actually hurt. There has been a fair bit of, conversation about Div 7A and 100A over the last couple of years. Some of it's been fun, some of it not so. But I can, I'll just say this at a general level, that we all need to be mindful of. And it's arrangements that, are put to us. And it happens in our small business space. You'd think, this only happens in the big end of town, but you'd be surprised. We get arrangements which seem more complex than necessary to achieve the relative commercial objective. There's a whole series of steps that serve no real purpose. The tax result seems to be at odds with the commercial result. The arrangement results in little or no risk in circumstances where significant risks would normally be expected. And the parties might be operating at non-arm's length terms. So, if we're seeing things like that, that's certainly red flags. And obviously, there's been some recent 100A cases. Some the Commissioner has lost, some the Commissioner has won. But I'll say this, we put a taxpayer alert out there, which I didn't mention in the slide deck. That's taxpayer alert 2022/1. But also that practical compliance guide is there to actually help you and help your clients navigate their risk. Now, it can't be tailored to every possible scenario in life, but, if you're saying to your client, if your client's coming to you with this particular sort of groovy and elaborate fact pattern, which might find them in, the red zone, it's up to them what sort of risk they want to take on, but, we'd much prefer them all into green zones where, we're all comfortable with the arrangements. Now, I hazard to say, and I kept saying this, 100A doesn't apply to most small businesses that have trusts. And there's hundreds of thousands of small business trusts kicking around. It does apply to some elements, but certainly is far more prevalent in the private wealth area. But it still is an issue. And we still have the perennial issue around Div 7A, making sure that things are done right, making sure things are done to ensure that things are sort of done properly. And we certainly put another ruling out there to make that very clear. I get told at various times that Div 7A is not very well understood. It's been around for a while. I'm not sure. That's something that we probably need to think about and how we approach things. So we'll just move on from that. And I seem to be going all right by time. Now, I don't do a lot of R&D work. So, like most things, I went and spoke to an expert. And so, just to give you that heads up. But R&D, and it was interesting watching the presentation before, when they talk about R&D, it might be R&D in that, oh, that's a good idea, but you know, is it R&D in the truly eligible, truly that's why you get a tax deduction, blah, blah, blah. So that's probably something we need to be mindful of. And certainly when I did do R&D work, I was always a bit worried that you had certain advisors going to clients and possibly on reflection thinking that seems to be, you know, too good to be true. So with that, just with that word, we are quite conscious of R&D claims, and that's quite, it can be quite troubling. Certainly there's issues when the R&D, you know, people know that the R&D is not eligible. There's also misunderstandings of the law. There's also issues around people thinking that if it's been lodged with the appropriate department, because the R&D concession is administered jointly by Aus Industry and ourselves. Aus Industry are responsible for the eligibility, but primarily they, in the main, just acknowledge that there's R&D happening, and then the ATO is then left to see well, actually what R&D actually has been spent, and in some cases, taking on actual eligibility in itself, which we can. Some of the concerns we do see around R&D is making sure that actually has been undertaken in a company. Sometimes it's not. We're also seeing issues where the relevant activities are being carried out by a related entity instead of the company, for example, a family trust, or the data or the intellectual property resulting from the activities is being used by a related entity without an arm's length agreement. That is, the related entity is not being charged a license fee or the fee is below market. I worry sometimes, a lot sometimes, you see a lot of R&D claims in the small business market, and I could almost bet London to a brick, but 95, and I'm being generous with 95, are not eligible. And that does worry me. Moving on to my bread and butter, small business concessions. There's some numbers there, and that's just from my area over the last 12 months. We get over 288 requests for advice for mainly private rulings. As I said before, many of them are trying to be considered to be a business, so that they can take advantage of the various exemptions or extensions. Others are trying to push themselves into the small business concessions when they're clearly not a small business. And that's also something that we look very closely at. Like I said before, that old tax ruling, 9711, does set out what is a business, and actually talks about what is a business in primary production. But it's certainly a focus area that we have. A particular concern of mine of late, and I'll share this with you, is around, and I very rarely use section references, but I will in this case, Division 328/G, which is about restructuring. And the small business concessions coming out of that. We're seeing attempts to access the genuine restructure safe harbour for the small business restructure rollover without meeting the requirements. And we're actually seeing a lot more taxpayers or advisors trying to rely on the safe harbour rule that's contained in that division without really providing any evidence of the commercial rationale for that restructuring. So we've seen some instances lately where it's part of family, part of estate or family planning, to move an asset on to another group of individuals. That's not the purpose of that particular division. And we are getting a fair degree of, we've had a number of rulings of late of that, and there certainly has been pushback from us on that. Having said that, in the past, sometimes we've sort of not put, looked as hard on those arrangements, particularly when they've come in as a private ruling. But I'll just flag that that's something that is on my radar. Okay. GST. I've got a pretty picture too. Certainly one of the areas that business struggle with is how GST applies to the sale, lease or subdivision of farmland. You and your client should be considering whether GST applies in every one of these circumstances. Supplies of farmland may be GST-free in specific circumstances, being sales of potential residential land if the land had been subdivided from land on which a farming business has been carried on for the last 5 years and the supply is made to an associate for less than market value or for no consideration. A sale of farmland if a farming business has been carried on the land for at least 5 years immediately preceding the supply and the recipient intends to, that a farming business be carried on that land. It's not a requirement for the supplier or the recipient in the second scenario of the land carried on the farming business on the land, for example. The landowner may have leased the land to another entity that carried on the farming business on the land. The other thing I'll just mention, and there's some fairly comprehensive slides here, the subdivision and sale of farmland by the owner may constitute a separate enterprise to the farming enterprise which suppliers made in carrying on that enterprise being taxable supplies. In this case, for taxable supplies being made, In the case of taxable supplies being made, the landowner may be able to use the GST margin scheme. The margin scheme may enable the calculation of GST in a concessional basis where eligibility requirements are met. Moving right along to our second slide on going GST and going concerns. Another key issue of agribusiness in the GST space is whether a sale or transfer of a business is GST free under the going concern provisions. So if you're selling a going concern, if the sale includes everything that's necessary for the continued operation of the business or the business is carried on by you until the day of sale. Property that's part of a sale of a going concern can include any of the following. The business property when sold together with the assets and the operating structure of the business. A fully tenanted building where the property and all leases, agreements and covenants are included in the sale. A partially tenanted building where the vacant part of the land is either actively marketed for lease or undergoing repairs or refurbishment. All leases, agreements and covenants are included in the sale. The sale of property by itself isn't regarded as an ongoing concern, as a going concern. And we're going pretty good for time here, so we're going to have we got many questions in the... One! Is it abusive?
No.
Okay. Pity? I don't mind. It's Friday. It's Friday that I'm heading to the Qantas Club, so... it's okay. There's been a bunch of budget announcements, not a lot really, but I will just focus on one for you and just give you a bit of an update, if I may. They were in relation to the technology and the skills boost measure that was announced by the previous government in 2022. As you may realise, the technology budget, technology part of that law was only meant to apply for a year, effectively a year. So that ends 2023. The skills one kicks on till 2024. However, we don't have law yet. And we are still waiting for that law. And There was some media yesterday or today. We're always doing media. Where somebody, some bright spark noticed that our forms had been published and there was a box to put these deductions in. Naturally, we can't, well, you know, unless it's a highly unusual scenario, they tend to frown on us making up the law before it actually is law. Now, naturally, that doesn't stop people from making the claim to get the 100% of that particular deduction. At the moment, you just can't get the additional 20%. So we've asked, we'll basically be saying that you can do a couple of things. You can lodge your return as is and maybe seek an amendment if that's appropriate. Or you could wait until that law is passed. So we are fundamentally very, 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 very conscious of this. But unfortunately, the package got tied up with another set of bills, and that's where we are. And there's been a bit of backwards and forwards in the Senate. So that's what we're intending to do. Naturally claim the normal amount and either wait or we'll see then what happens. Or do a second amendment later on. So that's probably my best advice to you. There's some other budget amendments. The technology investment boost. I know I had the, without dropping names, Treasury harassed me yesterday about that, about when we're going to have guidance out. I did suggest that I needed to see some law first. They're very keen to see some examples of what that might be. So I did suggest to my Treasury colleague, if you want to send me some what people are asking about, then we can consider it. And if we have law that reflects that, that we will provide content that helps people get things right. We certainly won't be doing anything fancy by some sort of formal tax ruling. Under my watch, and I've been in small business for a couple of years now, I only do tax rulings when I have to. So for example, the PSI ruling that came out earlier in the year, the FAME TD that will come out before June, for example, not that anybody, well, some of you may be famous and this may impact on you, but where I can, I try to make things relatively simple. And certainly we are very conscious of PCGs that help and guide people. So I've left plenty of time for questions. So I'm more than happy to take questions. If I can.
just an observation, Anthony, and thank you very much for your presentation. Just in the context of, you talked about non-commercial loss rules, and our technology presentation, and also we know as practitioners, is that different types of commercial activities, and I'm past the point here, Anthony, of talking about whether they're carrying on a business.
Yeah.
They're definitely carrying on a business as such. I've just found sometimes that I need to provide lots and lots of information to the case officer as such to explain to him or her as to what is the nature of this commercial transaction. And so sometimes I've inquired as to whether within the ATO is there a little cell as such, which has got ag understanding, and maybe it's got a linkage through to some of the farm representative bodies, or maybe it's got a link through to Murray Watt's office or whatever, so that whether that was it an ambition within the ATO because of the importance of agribusiness that we might have a little bit of a specialization.
That's a good, Tom, isn't it?
Tom.
That's a good question, and I know you're a good customer of ours, and we do have a very small team that look after that, and those people grow and they have to do different things as well. One of the reasons, and I understand without, this is not reflecting on my colleagues previously have presented here, we made a deliberate decision to send me today. Now, don't get too carried away. Yeah, it was to indicate to the sector and to you as advisors, and I loved that last session, that we acknowledge and appreciate, you know, the sector, and you know, we're certainly here to work with the sector. So the more that we can learn, you know, we're not, you know, for my sins, you know, I spent most of my life working in large groups, working outside. I know very little about the agricultural sector, but you know, I like to bring things back to basics. It's like when somebody's trying to say to me that social media influencers are quite different. I go, no, we bring them back to basics. So we understand things. I think you know, as we work together around lead times, I'd ideally like to put out some content about lead times that would be sensible. So that's somewhere we'd like to go. You know, it's all about me at the moment. So I have a small team of 50. 2/3 of them do the day-to-day rulings. And then the more senior guys do the more, more strategic stuff. But certainly lead times is one of the things on our radar. And we can only really do, again, it's all about me, a couple of big things a year. So this year was the PSI ruling. We spent a lot of time on the 100A. We've spent a lot of time, some time on the FAME ruling. But yeah, that'll be a project going forward. But I certainly hear you. And certainly, it would not be a bad thing if we had closer relations with other departments. So I did actually answer that question, didn't I? So, okay, I try not to answer questions, but any other? Any other questions?
Anthony, just sort of talking between other departments, one of the concerns arises with the R&D.
Yep.
Do you see if Oz Industry are granting to the applicant, and 95% of it could be correct, is there a way that you can see that?
Oz Industry is a separate department. They have their own. I can't tell Oz Industry what to do. I did try that once. Doesn't work. I worry that even those 95 aren't even registered with Oz Industry. And Oz Industry, I won't say rubber stamp, but amongst friends, but it's basically a rubber stamp. And then they go about and make the claims. So it's a continual thing we've worked on. From a previous life, I worked in large business and was responsible for all the banks, and there were some very interesting conversations with Oz Industry about, you know, apps and stuff like that, which is not R&D. But yeah, I hear you. Any other thing? We're amongst friends, apparently.
I'll raise the question, which was submitted online, and it's a question without notice on a specific technical point. Does the tax office consider for the 15-year exemption in the CGT concessions, retirement is necessary?
I might have to take that on. Yeah. I'll take that on. Typically, well, depends what retirement means. So I'll come back to you. I'll come back. Probably not enough detail there to answer it, to be honest. Any other questions? Don't dive. G'day.
Media going around about
media.
Yeah, about the technology investment boost.
There was some media going around about the technology investment boost, that the legislation was only written for individuals and partnerships and it didn't cover companies and trusts. I haven't kept up to date with it because there isn't law yet, but law as drafted in some...
Can I be honest? Yeah. I haven't looked at that for months.
Yeah.
I'll check. Sorry.
Someone had a copy of the draft.
Yeah, I haven't looked. Sorry, I haven't looked at it, yonks. I will check that. But we've got content all written up. I wrote that up when it was announced because I remember having arguments with Treasury about examples. So... have a lot of arguments with Treasury. But yeah, I'll check that.
And just a comment, $46 billion is too much empathy.
On what?
The small business debts.
Oh, Well, that's the thing, isn't it?
I'm saying that as a tax.
No, I get that. I get that. But, you know, like for my sins, I was responsible for the JobKeeper advice. I worked, you know, we made a conscious decision to hold off because, you know, we didn't know what was happening. Nobody did, you know, so. Yeah. Well, yeah. Look, ABA have reached out to talk about that sort of stuff too. We're really trying to. This might surprise you, but you know, we are truly here to work with small business and have empathy for their situation. You know, and help them, you know, thrive and strive. So, any other media things you want to get off your chest? All right. I'm glad you didn't fall asleep. You're kicking me off now? Or? Okay. No, I've got nothing.
Okay, well, in that case, thank you very much for your comments. They're always very interesting to us to hear what interests you and your staff. So, again, thanks for your time. Please join me in thanking Anthony. Okay, so our next session will commence here. Is it 3:30? 3 o'clock, it says here. 3 o'clock, straight away. Do we get morning, afternoon tea? Yeah. Well, please grab a quick coffee. You do have, you know, 10 minutes. Yeah. Okay, there's a late question.
All right.